Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to a podcast from CelticUnderground.net. I am Harry Brady and this is podcast number 229. Before I get started, I'd like to say a thank you to those people at the Celtic St Mirren game who put money in the Celtic FC Foundation Christmas Ale buckets. I was out there, started off in the pouring rain, and the weight of my bucket at the end of that collection was very heartening. It's quite heartening to have a guy come and put a fiver in my bucket, Mark, and apologies Mark if I get your surname, who actually wasn't going to the game. He didn't have time to go to the game, he came and put a fiver in the bucket and then left and went home. To every single supporter who put it in, as Brian Quinn said to me when he went past on the way to doing his bucket, this is what our club is all about. And it was particularly heartening with Brian Quinn because I know Mr. Quinn, who's 78, volunteered to do bucket collecting and was offered in the executive lounges, and he said no, he wanted to be outside because that's where the supporters were. A guy who is a lifelong Celtic fan and always gets being a Celtic fan. So I know that Tony Hamilton, the Celtic Foundation's target was £65,000, and I don't know the numbers yet because I think the bucket collection, coin counting and note counting, they would get the numbers back the day after I record this podcast, but I'm pretty certain that come Friday the 19th of December, Tony and his team will be out starting to distribute the stuff to ensure that 200 families in and around the East End of Glasgow have a better Christmas than they would have had were it not for Celtic and our supporters. So a personal message from me as one of the bucket collectors, thanks very much for everybody who contributed and thanks very much for everybody who is a bucket collector. Now that I've got that personal message out of the way, it's time for a pre-Christmas podcast between myself and Mr. Lackey Moore. In the podcast, we discuss the way that Celtic have been playing of late, with the possibility that we could have scored 20 goals against St Mirren and Motherwell combined, but didn't, but it was still very enjoyable to watch. The fantastic fact that we've drawn into Milan in the post-Christmas Europa League game. The nonsense going on at Rangers and Lackey's predictions for the Dundee United Ross County game. So enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, with him, Lackey Moore.
Merry Christmas to you.
I am joined by Lackey Moore. So, Lackey Moore, how are you doing?
I'm very well, Harry.
And have you been able to get to many Celtic games recently?
I haven't been since the last European game. That's the last game I was at.
And of the games that you've seen on the television or been at?
Yeah, I've watched on the television, yeah.
What's your thoughts on the way the team's playing?
Well, I still think the defence is a major concern. I just think, I was listening to Paddy Bonner, I think I tweeted about it last week. Remember the last time we spoke and I was saying about the need to find defenders who love to defend?
Yes.
Well, he was doing the Sports Sound podcast the other night and he was talking about exactly the same thing. And then he was on the huddle and he was saying the very same thing. He said that when he played, he says, we didn't always get it right and there was times we didn't defend very well. He says, but fundamentally we had players whose sole ambition was to have a shutout. The idea that they would lose a goal was anathema to them. They hated it, you know, even if they won. Mm-hmm. Said letting a goal, they felt they hadn't done their jobs properly. He said, in order to do that, they need to work as a unit. He says, and it's quite clear to me that our team doesn't work as a unit. He said that he thought that Virgil thinks he has so much pace, he doesn't need to think too hard about his positional sense when other players are drawn out. He thinks he can catch the guy if he goes by him, and he says he doesn't. And he said, someone needs to get them together and have them working as a unit, where they care for each other as well as for themselves. and that they realise that for all it's good to play nice football and make great passes and things like that, their fundamental job is to stop the other team scoring, and that should be their main focus. And I think that's been clear in just about every game they've played, that that's not their main focus. Even games that they've won comfortably. And I mean, the first few minutes of Saturday were alarming, the room that St Mirren found. And is it just a case of, oh, well, Epi was playing, he's a diddy? It's not just that. It's the way the whole defence is organised, or not organised, as the case may be. And I think that until they sort that out, they're never going to really become a very, very good team.
One of the things I remember, you're talking about working in partnerships and as a unit, one of the things I remember Ronnie Dyla saying at the AGM that we were both at was that he wanted to have to create more partnerships within the team, to have partnerships of twos and threes and fours where a group of people work together. And he said that. And then last week, I think it was Rebel or whatever it is, on Twitter, commenting that this week is the first week that Ronnie Dyla will have the team to work with for a full week between games since the start of the season.
That's correct. I thought that myself the other night. I thought, this is the first time there hasn't been a midweek game. It's the first time he's actually been able to work with them in the training ground.
Yeah, which might not, people might say, oh, surely they can train. But if you think about it, if we play a game on a Saturday, the players will have the Sunday off because they don't work 7 days a week. Some players might go in for, if they've had any niggles, but effectively that. Then they will be in on a Monday, and it probably will be light training because they had the game at the weekend. Then they'll be in on a Tuesday. And then if they've got a game on a Wednesday night, then the Thursday will be off or light training, in on the Friday, game on the Saturday, and then the cycle starts again. So you can see why he's problem with, if he isn't, if they're not working as a unit, you can see I can see the challenge of him trying to pull that together.
There's two things, like I say. One was that I heard Robbie Nielsen talking, and I know they don't play many midweek games because they were knocked out the League Cup and the other cup that the small teams play in. And he was going on about the fact that they beat Rangers or Sevco, and they were in the next day. And apparently has them in just about every day, working with them on something or other. And I mean, if players for Hearts can be doing extra sessions all the time, I don't see why Celtic's players can't be doing extra sessions.
No, but again, at the same time, they are entitled to at least one, possibly 2 days off a week.
Yeah, well, they had a day off yesterday, I believe. Ronnie Dyla said they were going to have Tuesday off, and then they would have 4 days of training, training sessions before they played under United.
Which, as we say, will be the first time that they will have worked 4 days in a row on the training pitch since the start of the season.
Yeah.
Which, and again,
the thing was, you know, we were talking earlier about the Revisita de la Liga, the thing that's on where you watch the highlights of the La Liga, and that guy Guillaume Balog or Balag, whatever his name is, he was talking about Barcelona.
Yep.
And he was saying that he was looking at the differences between Barcelona and Real Madrid, but he was saying that he thought that in order to create the units that Barcelona require to get back to the level they were at, he says it'll take months rather than weeks. Mm-hmm. Now, if that's true of Barcelona, and he was saying it, was it Luis Enrique, is that the coach?
Mm-hmm.
That's his name. He was singing his praises even though he's come into a lot of criticism, because he says you do not build a team overnight. He says, and they really need to work hard on the training ground to develop the systems that an effective team will have. So if it's true for Barcelona, who have good players, it must be equally true for us, who don't necessarily have all good players.
Yeah, and I mean, your point, I think you and I have been discussing, and your point about Van Dijk, I'm a bit concerned that Van Dijk is also believing his own publicity at the moment, or the publicity that he had prior to the move that he didn't get in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also part of the problem, that he is... He believes that he's a £10 million player to compete at the top of the English Premiership. So he doesn't need to play that hard when he's playing at Celtic every week. That's my concern, yeah, to some extent.
Another Mark Viduka?
Quite possibly, yeah. Another Mark Viduka, who thinks it's too easy here and he doesn't need to try.
It always seems to me too that whenever he does get a kind of rude awakening, whenever he gets a rude awakening a bit, when he's been involved in bad goals, he then pops up a couple of games and scores a few goals, and everybody's singing his praises again.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, his job isn't necessarily to score goals. His job is to stop the other team scoring goals. And it just bothers me. I think that's the real area of the team that would give you concern. Because I think they do play good football. I think the links between the fullbacks and the wingers and the midfield players, you can see progress. The strikers might not always be on fire, but you can see they're actually quite decent players.
Well, you say about
defense is poor.
Yeah, you say about seeing progress. We not four past St Mirren. Should have been more. Could have been about 10.
Mm-hmm.
We not only one past Motherwell, and you know I got a text from a Rangers fan and a Kilmarnock fan after the Motherwell game. I found it interesting because I was reading on Twitter Celtic fans bemoaning the fact that Motherwell could have made it one each. And the text from a Rangers fan was, "This is the first game of yours I've seen this season. If you play like that against us, it will be double figures." And the text from the Kilmarnock fan was, "This is one of the first games I've seen of yours this season. If this is the way you're going to be playing under Ronnie Dyla, you're in for a fair amount of fun in the next few months." Yeah, so that was supporters of other teams who could see what sometimes some of our own fans couldn't see. But taking into consideration, we could and should have scored a lot more goals in those two games. What's your impression at the moment of the way the team's playing?
Well, I mean, I think I see in each game, I see periods, purple patches, when they look really terrific. And then I see other periods within the same game where they're very, very ordinary. And they don't even seem to be communicating with each other, especially from the midfield to the defence. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're not functioning. And Ronnie Dyla will say that. He will pick out 20 minutes and he'll say, "We were brilliant for 20 minutes." And which leaves you thinking, "We weren't brilliant for the rest of the game." And he'll say, "We could have scored more goals." But I don't think he was overly impressed with the way they were playing that led up to those missed chances. And it's just, I mean, they don't really, for all the singing of the praises of John Guidetti, and I think he's a smashing player, they don't have a really clinical finisher at the moment. I don't see a guy at the moment who, like Larsson, you would rely on to score every week. Now, that's asking a lot to ask for Larsson. But these guys are supposedly to be quite proficient players. They should be able to score a lot more goals in the Scottish League, and they're missing a lot of chances. So I don't... In terms of how they are playing, I think it's like a patchwork quilt. And some of it's really bright and cheery and entertaining, and some of it is really quite concerning. Because as Stefan Johansson said last week, if we'll play that in the next round, we won't beat anybody. It doesn't matter who we draw, he says.
Well, you mentioned Stefan Johansson. What's your thoughts on Johansson?
I think he's a terrific player. I really do. I think he understands what the manager wants. And he has got a tremendously high level of fitness and energy that will allow him to play the manager the way the manager wants. Sometimes his feet, he's so quick at bursting with young people, his own feet get in the way. Do you know what I mean? You think, well, he's certainly scoring, he doesn't. But overall, I think he's probably the Scott Brown, he's the best player I've got at the moment.
And where's his best position, do you think?
I think it's played up further up the park. I don't think he's a sitting midfield player. I think he could be a sitting midfield player if the right players were around about him. But for us, I think he's better playing further forward because he's the one guy who goes beyond them and frightens other defenders. Quite a number of goals have come by him closing people down. He actually gets the idea of closing people down. Now, I was, again, watching the La Liga thing, then one of the things they were doing was monitoring Barcelona, how they no longer closed teams down the way they did.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what he was saying Luis Enrique will need to work on. He almost said, not quite said, but as far as closing people down go, you can forget about Messi because he's not going to do it for you. So the rest of them have to work doubly hard. But I don't think we have a Messi, so everybody needs to pull their weight, do their shift. And I think Brown gets it. I think he gets it. I think the fullbacks have understand their role, you know, in getting forward and linking up. And the sort of link-up play I thought at the weekend between Stokes and Izaguirre was quite delightful. But really, I'm still not sure what his best team is. And as that was another thing. Luis Enrique's never picked the same team 2 weeks running. And neither has Roddy Dyla.
Well, we're almost halfway through the league season. We are going to be top of the league at Christmas. We're going to be in four competitions at Christmas, playing European football post-Christmas. So if I take you through and we try and establish who you think our best team is. So, in goals, fairly straightforward.
Craig Gordon.
Yeah. And Craig Gordon compared to Fraser Foster. Do you think we've lost, gained, or no difference?
I think we've gained. I think Craig Gordon's a really good goalkeeper.
Okay. Now,
Fraser Foster was a really good goalkeeper.
Yeah, so did I.
And considering the big a lot of money for him, the other guy for nothing, I think we've gained.
Now, you once criticised, I used to be a goalkeeper, so you once criticised me that whenever I run through a Celtic team, I go left back to the left back across. That's because I used to play in goals, when I'm visualising the Celtic team, I still visualise it from being at the back of I still visualise a team, so I visualise it from left to right. So I'm going to start in a logical way. So right back, Lustig, Matthews, Darnell Fisher, or Effie Ambrose, who's our best right back?
I would say probably. Well, you see,
when everybody's fit.
The best of them is Lustig, but I wouldn't play Lustig at right back.
So who would you play at right back?
I would play probably. I think if they were all playing at their best, I would play the young boy. What's his name?
Fisher. Matthews. Okay.
Because I think he's very good going forward. I would play Mikael Lustig at centre-half.
Even though, I mean, from my own perception, I've been tweeting recently. I remember when the first 6 months Matthews was in the team thinking, if we had a Celtic player out of our academy system at his age, playing his level of football, we'd be raving about him wanting to play every game for Scotland. And he should be the role model, because he's only 19, 20, he should be the role model for everybody in the academy. I don't think Matthews is as good a player as he was in the first 6 months he was at Celtic, and he's not been as good a player for a year.
Well, you said that the last time he spoke, but I think he's coming back to that form.
Okay, so if you played Matthews...
At least going forward, yes.
So you played Matthews at right back, so the two centre-halves you would have would be...
I would put Lustig at centre-half because I think he's more intelligent than anybody else and he would actually understand what his job was.
Okay, so you'd play...
And I don't think he has a huge ego, so he wouldn't want to be beckoned by... He'd be quite happy to make sure the defence did their job properly. He could be an organiser.
So you'd play Lustig and Van Dijk?
Probably.
Yeah.
I like Denier, but I think he's small.
Okay. Left back?
He may actually be a good option at right back.
Who?
Denier.
And left back?
Biesi.
Okay.
It always Biesi.
Right. So if we then get on the system of 4-2-3-1, since that seems to be the manager's favourite system, the two sitting midfielders, who would they be?
For me, it would be Beaton and Brown.
Okay, why beat on ahead of Mulgrew?
Because he keeps the ball. His what you would call custody of the ball is more secure, I think.
So have you been?
I think Charlie does it to a degree, and then he wants to make a sort of Hail Mary pass like a quarterback and just gives the ball away very often.
So you're heartened by Beaton's role in the team in the last couple of weeks?
I think so, because I think he gives it and gets it back and gives it again. I think he's possibly capable of more than that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they've asked him to do, and I think he can do it.
And you obviously, like me, and unlike somebody else who's sometimes on our podcast and on our site, you like Scott Brown?
Well, most valuable player.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so after those two, we've got the three attacking players in the unit of four. So who would your three players be?
Well, I think the way they're playing at the moment, well, I'd love to have Stefan Johansson, because I think he's the guy who goes beyond and links up.
Yep.
I don't know what Griffiths has done to be so much in the margins. Because I thought that night against, what was that game he played? One of the European ties. He played really, really well.
The Icelandic team.
No, not the Icelandic. Well, recently in the qualifying games.
Oh, in the qualifying games, away, they not play away in Astra.
He played at home, one of the home games. He played,
and he played at home against, did he not play at home against Salzburg?
I think he did. He played well that night. And I think I'd like to see him play more often in Scotland, because I think he's a better player than many of the players that in Scotland. You know, he proved he can do it in Scotland when he played for the Hibs. But I quite like Stoke sometimes. I think Stoke does some nice things, and then other times he just annoys the life out of me. And I'm not sure about Skepovic. Sometimes he looks as though he could be a player, and then other times he doesn't. And then you get Forrest, who seems to come in and out, do nice wee things, and then disappears again. So you're really pairing two from five there.
So out of the... So Johansson, Forrest, Griffiths, Stokes, Skefovic, what about Commons?
And it's Commons. Commons as well, you see. Yeah, it's very difficult. The manager doesn't have a good job there.
Mubarak.
Although I don't think he's a long-term... He hasn't shown me enough to think that it'd be worth spending the money on him.
Okay, so no Mubarak.
Is he any better than Stokes? No.
No.
And he's no better than, I don't think he's better than Griffiths or Commons. He's pacey, but he's not a terrific player. So I wouldn't be too worried about him. Nor Tonev, although Tonev showed some interesting signs of ability in that last game against Salzburg. I thought he was quite... Because when he came on, I thought, oh, God, they're bringing him on. But he was actually quite good.
So, based on those five that you described, forgetting about Commons for a moment, what would you do with Commons?
I don't know.
Because I think Commons' position is Johansson's position, and Johansson's position is Commons' position.
But the difference is that Johansson will burst a gut for you, whereas Commons doesn't.
So would you move towards his position in the contract, or would you get to January and say, look, this is the deal, and if you're not happy, we're going to take a couple of hundred grand and get you to Bolton? If Bolton's the option.
Mm-hmm.
Which would you do? Or would you keep him there till the end of the season, let his contract run out and let him walk out the door in June for nothing?
I don't think I'd let him walk out for nothing.
So do you offer him closer to what he wants, or do you stick with where we are, and if he won't come to the position that we're in, do you sell him?
I think he's a bit of an enigma, because we've talked about this before. I think there are games where he is in the margins of the game, and then he does something tremendous. Whereas Johansson always seems to be involved in the game, but doesn't have that same finesse at scoring goals that Common seems to have. If you could make the two into one player, you'd probably have a world beater. But they're not. They both have shortcomings.
Hence the reason why they're playing for Celtic.
Possibly, although, you know, in Johansson's case, I think he's a developing player, whereas McCombs is a fairly mature pro. I could see Johansson getting better.
Okay. So you're avoiding the question.
Well, it's not, I don't know what the answer is to the question. Sometimes you don't know the answer. It seems to me they've got a number of players, all who have certain qualities. But none of them have shown in regular form that would make you say, yeah, he's the man. I mean, I would say the one who's played best of them is probably Anthony Stokes.
But then is that because he's playing every week and he knows he's playing, so he gets a run?
That could well be the case. But he is scoring goals and he's making goals, and some of his link-up play is very nice.
So we've gone through the three that sit behind the striker up front. So I take it that's a no, it's easy answer. Who's your single man up front?
Well, it'll be Guidetti, I would imagine, because he scored most goals. It looks like he's scored goals, although he's missed a fair number of chances as well. I was interested that thing they do with the players where they ask them questions about their teammates?
Yep.
Well, it's this week at Stefan Johansson, and he's quite interesting. He reckons that the worst trainer is Guidetti.
Right.
And they asked him, what was the other thing they asked him? That he was kind of quite dismissive of Guidetti, you know, in a humorous way. But then he asked who the most skillful player at the park was, and he said, Guidetti. He's the most skillful player there is. And I saw a thing today on the web. Did you see it? The link to some... phenomenal skills. Unbelievable dribbling skills. Drawing the ball back and then flicking it over the defender's head and running by him. It was just brilliant. Now, I haven't seen him try anything like that when he's playing for the Celtic. He seems to be fairly, you know, doing his job efficiently.
There was a bit against St Mirren where I turned to my brother and I said, that's the reason why we might have a chance of signing Guidetti. And it was a sort of ball broke through and he broke away. And two St Mirren players managed to run him down because he's just not quite got the pace that you now need at the top level of modern football.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not doing him down. It was actually, in some ways, it was heartening because without that pace, he might not get a Premiership type team in for him, and actually he might think, no, Celtic might be a good bet for a wee while.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I mean, doesn't have the sort of pace that like Savi Aguero has.
Yes.
So you can see why he's not going to get in the Manchester City team.
Aye. And you mentioned a player there in the three sitting behind Guidetti, Tonev. So what's your opinion on the Tonev 7-game ban that's been upheld?
I could see a lot of righteous anger by Celtic supporters about the whole process. I think the process is clearly flawed. And I read this, the report, the summary of what took place, and I thought this isn't very good. But I was intrigued by Celtic's comments that they didn't think that Logan, that his name?
Yep.
Hadn't been telling the truth. And I thought, well, if you think he was telling the truth, why are you going to bat for Tony?
I think Celtic's attitude is Logan may be saying what he heard or what he thinks he heard.
Yes.
Which means he's not lying because he thinks that's what he heard. But Celtic's attitude is Tony saying that's not what he said. So Celtic are not saying he's made it up. They're just saying what you think you heard is not what we think he said.
Yes. But there was another thing that intrigued me was the fact that he got ordered off the week after Aberdeen for use of foul and abuse of language to the officials. And then a thing that he had done on Twitter today where he photographed himself making a rude gesture and a comment about Tony, something about, you know, if you can't do the time, don't do the crime stuff.
Yep.
And I thought, you think you're a smart ass.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you become a credible witness to anybody?
Having said that, you know, you... you've got a guy who you accuse of being a racist. People then tell you, including him, that he didn't, and you're sure that he did it. You might be pretty repulsed about the concept of racism in football and think, well, stuff you.
I thought his attitude was actually, I used the word on Twitter yesterday, reprehensible. I thought he could have dealt with that by going inside to the dressing room and challenging Tony and the Celtic through his manager or whoever and getting that sorted out without that, I thought, quite childish demonstration of running to his manager and greeting and then running to the referee, you know. I thought...
But if you're adamant that somebody's done that, and in the modern world's attitude to racism, where I can see Celtic's point is, I don't know, and you and I will never know whether Tonev did it or not.
No.
I think Celtic's attitude is, a young guy being labelled as a racist could be detrimental to his career. Mm-hmm. And having somebody with that hanging over, you know, that description being attached to him for the rest of his career on one word against another.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's Celtic's point, that you can't tar a man's reputation when there's no evidence to back up either person. It is purely one word against another, and you just think one guy is more reliable than another.
I was always also intrigued right at the start by the Bulgarian Football Association's intervention. They suggested he was their poster boy, really. He was a role model.
Yep.
And they rejected any notion that he was a racist. And I know that a lot of these Eastern European footballers replete with racism, but it was interesting. I thought that they made just a spirited defence of the guy.
I think...
I noticed... They asked him questions about had he ever played against Logan before or something.
Mm-hmm.
But he was at Aston Villa. Logan was at Aston Villa. Were they there at the same time?
I've no idea.
I couldn't work out the time frames.
I suppose there's a possibility they were, I really don't know. But from the perspective now of Celtic, have got a player on loan, and by, I don't think Celtic are going to take this to Cass, because I think you can't just take it to Cass just because you don't like it. I don't think Celtic are going to take it to Cass. If Celtic don't take it to Cass, they've now got a player who's going to be out.
97 games.
Aye, so 7 games is, on the number of games that we've got, I think it's end of February.
Probably will be.
So, do we then just say, turn around to Villa and say, well, that's a clear breach, so we're just going to send him back home to you and cut your losses? Or do we keep him? What would you do?
Well, I don't know. We don't see him every day. I mean, they must see something in him that we haven't seen so far. Because it keeps bringing him on in important games like European ties. But I don't know. Is he worth keeping?
I've not seen anything that justifies keeping him.
No.
We're going to be paying him until February, March time when he's not playing any games. If we're not going to keep him and he's not playing any games until the league will be pretty much over and he can't, then would we be just as well cutting our losses and letting him go?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
it was a great clamour for signing him anyway.
No. And if we're not going to sign him, it might actually be a convenient excuse to move him on and have somebody else come onto the wage bill, because we could find a way of doing it.
I would hope that would be the only way of doing it, that was the only motivation. But, you know, it's a valid point that you can't have a player in your books that you can't use.
Yeah. And if you've got an excuse to ship him on.
He did say it. It was rank stupidity apart from anything else. You really don't need players that stupid. We'll already get Lee Griffiths and Anthony Stokes. We need another one.
Right, so we've got the January transfer window coming up. Where would you look to, if you were able to just sign two players, where would you look to strengthen the team?
If I could buy a really good centre-back, I'd buy one.
Okay, so a centre-back, where else?
And if I could find a really good schema.
The reason I asked that, because somebody made the interesting point during the Dynamo Zagreb game, that we've all been sitting bemoaning the fact that Gaudetti's not been able to play in European football, and we miss Gaudetti for European football. We've actually scored goals in every away game this season. And what we've missed is actually a solid defence. And we've now drawn Inter Milan in the last 32 of the Europa League. So what's your thoughts on getting Inter Milan? And can we get past Inter Milan?
Well, I haven't really paid a lot of attention to it. I don't know who's Inter Milan.
They're currently 12th in Serie A.
Italian football is not as good as it was 20 years ago.
Yep.
At one time it was the best league in the world. And players would flock to go there, but they're not doing that now. They're all flocking to get to England. Because that's where the money is.
Yep.
So I don't really know. You can always rely on Italian teams producing good players. But I don't know how good a team they are.
But your thoughts on getting into Milan?
It's an interesting draw. There's a lot of hype already about it. I noticed, did you see the thing yesterday about Sky's Twitter blurb?
No.
No? They announced that Celtic had run into Milan and we'd beaten them in the 1967 European Cup final with goals from Archie Gebel and Stevie Chalmers. Then they said that we'd also lost to them in the semi-final in, what was it, 72 or
72, yeah.
Yeah, and they said we lost 6-5 in penalties. And you think, no, we didn't. No. Because Dixie missed the first ever penalty in the first ever penalty shootout.
Yep.
And he went on to score 5.
Yep.
And he scored 4.
5-4.
How do these clowns get a job as researchers?
I know, it doesn't take long to do a Google search to just look up that game. I mean, you could sort of defend them in years gone past, where it would have taken ages to search that out if you didn't know the answer and you thought, oh, it's a guy called Gemmel who did it and they lost on penalties. But with Google, it takes them 2 minutes.
But the thing is, in years gone past, there probably wasn't the same urgency.
No.
To get that soundbite or that quote out. So people would do their research properly. Whereas I think they just feel got to see something right away.
Were you at the 72 game?
Yes, I was. It was heartbreaking. I actually tried to get tickets for the away game.
Mm-hmm.
It was during the Easter holidays. And I think it was a travel company in Shettleston. Used to do a lot of it. And at the last minute, the bus was cancelled, the flight was cancelled. And so I didn't get to go to that game. I was going to go to Milan for that. And they drew 0-0, they played very well. But the game at Parkhead was a typically sterile defensive performance by masters of the art, although they got a good... They were beaten by Ajax in the final. I think Ajax would have beat us anyway.
Yeah.
Because, was it the previous year Ajax beat us? Was it the quarterfinals? Or was it the semi-final again? I think it was the quarterfinal. Johan Cruyff destroyed us.
Mm-hmm.
It was one each at Hamden. The most annoyed thing about that night was that the Huns beat Bayern Munich to get to the final of the Cup Winners' Cup, which they then won.
Yep.
It was fascinating. The same night in the same town, Celtic played Rangers. Both had crowds in excess of 70,000, and somehow the Polish were able to manage it.
My mate always goes on about that. About how 40 years ago the police could manage having two games on in the same city, and now
the same night, and now
now they get their knickers in a twist about just one big game.
Pathetic, it really is. But so no, it was a big disappointment.
So it will bring back some memories. Are you expecting a full house?
I don't know. I suppose there might be, yeah.
I did think
did they play the Paris Buns before they play them?
Yeah, they play the new Rangers. 2 weeks, I think it will be. Well, I think we play them on the 19th. We play Inter Milan the 19th and we play the new Rangers on the 1st of February.
Right. On the 19th of January or 19th of February?
19th of February we play Inter Milan and then the 19th and then the 26th and we play the new Rangers on the 1st of February.
If they beat the Paris Buns, then there'll be a sellout at the Inter Milan game.
Tickets went on sale for the Inter Milan game today.
I believe,
I did that.
The season ticket holders.
Yes, but I also thought it was an interesting thing. I thought it was partly January and February the worst 2 months for a football club for revenue. So I thought it was partly to get as much money in as quickly as possible, partly to then so that they can start pushing the half season book. Because if you buy a half season book. You can then, you're guaranteed to be able to automatically pick up a ticket for the Inter Milan game at the same time. So I did wonder if there was an element of make sure people get their value out of the half season book by saying if you buy one of these, you can get an Inter Milan ticket.
See, the half season book starts at the Ross County game.
Yep. Which, if we were to beat Inter Milan, there would, between now and the split, we would have no Saturday 3 p.m. kickoff after Ross County. Aye, if we beat Inter Milan. Because the 10th of January game was a Saturday game. And we've obviously postponed, we've moved that for us to have a 2 week break in the sun.
Yes, that's right.
The game, we were due to play at home, I think, against Kilmarnock on Saturday, the 31st of January. But we're now playing new Rangers on Sunday, the 1st of February. So that's gone. And we've got two home games immediately following the two Inter Milan games. So, of course, they'll now be moved to a Sunday. So that means there's no... The only Sunday game, the only Saturday at 3 p.m. game currently in our fixture list is against Dundee United in March.
Mm-hmm.
But it's in March after one of the last 16 games of the Europa League. So if we get past Inter Milan, that game will be moved to a Sunday as well, and that's it. So we will play... And then if... At the moment... So... We currently have one Saturday 3 p.m. kickoff in 2015 in the diary.
And the likes of the United game either has moved to a Sunday or probably televised, sort of an early kickoff for that as well.
Quite possibly so. Yeah. That'll be 1 o'clock kickoff as well. So that's our fixture. So you're looking forward to the Inter Milan game. Are we going to get through?
I don't know. I really don't know. It depends if they make the progress. What you were saying at the start of the business, if they now have a wee spell of one game a week, really, where they can work, train together and try and develop these systems that we're talking about, because they need to do it. I mean, this kind of off-the-cuff stuff will just not work against a good team. If St. Mirren can tear you apart three times in the first 5 minutes, what's a good team going to do to you?
Okay, so we've also touched on the fact that prior to the Inter Milan game is a game against a team called Rangers. What have you been making of the Rangers fiasco? You know, obviously not over the last 2.5-3 years, but specifically when Rangers were about to come down your way and 5 years before kickoff, the manager announces he's resigned.
Yeah. I saw the announcement on Sky. That it was a hint about it. And I went away and I looked everywhere I could to find out and actually tweeted about it. And I said, it appears to me that he hasn't resigned at all. He has said, I will resign if you give me a large wedge of money.
Mm-hmm.
And right from the start, I thought that was fairly obvious. He wasn't going anywhere unless he was recompensed for his trouble. I mean, you consider how bad a manager he's been, that's a joke.
Yeah.
So, I quite like the idea of him being still there, because I think a lot of the points that were made on radio at the weekend about, well, at least nine of their players are out of contract at the end of the season. So they're looking at a lame duck manager and a bunch of players who are going to make sure they don't get injured,
mm-hmm.
because they're going to look for a new contract somewhere. And also, How can he really exert any authority over these players if they know he has no future there? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it intrigues me that there was a thing tonight, I believe, Eileen saw it on the television. There was some woman haranguing the Easdales. It's been on Twitter. I never looked at it, but she said she was shouting at them. I saw a quote where she'd say something about, Ali's the only honest man among you. You're only interested in money, you know, like Ali. And I'm thinking, what world do these people inhabit? Because even if you weren't ill-disposed towards them, as I am, if you were an objective onlooker, you would think the only people who have actually put any of their own money in and look likely to lose it are the Easdales. But they're the baddies. Oh. And this charlatan who's wanting to screw them stupid for more money than has been for the last 3 years, he's a hero.
The narrative on last Friday night and Saturday in the papers was Ali, being a Rangers man at heart, is sick and fed up of good Rangers people being made redundant, and it was the last straw. Huh. See if he had Rangers at heart. Now, in order to go up, Rangers need to be in the playoffs, and in order to have the best chance of the playoffs, they need to finish second to get the easiest route through the playoffs.
Mm.
If he had Rangers at heart, would it not be more beneficial to the club, if you're going to announce it at all, to do it after the game and not 5 hours before a crucial game against one of the teams who are competing for your second, third, fourth spot in the championship? If you're going to do it, since all he did was hand in his notice because he's got a permanent 12-month rolling contract, do you not hand in your notice? And if there's going to be a leak, the leak should come from the club, not you. And then if you're going to do it and you're doing it in all the best interests of the club, why do you need to then go and hire Jim Traynor to run the PR line that you want the media to peddle? Which is what he did.
I was talking to somebody the other day who said that Traynor left the Daily Record without even a pension.
Right.
He got a year's salary up front from Charlie and thought he had got the brass ring, you know.
Uh-huh.
And it didn't work out, and he's out in his backside now. And I think the only person that is hiring them is probably Sally, because he's not going to try anybody else.
Well, I don't know about the financial position of I don't know about the financial position of Jim Traynor, but and then so you've got the crazy position. Obviously, it's a game of brinksmanship because Ali has decided to hand in his notice to call their bluff to get him to pay off his pay. They go, and I think it was Stephen McGowan of the Daily Mail tweeted, so they then went and stabbed Ali in the chest, in the front, by disclosing that by going on to his notice period, Ali was now back up to his salary of £750,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
So he's obviously thinking, they're not going to let me just run down my contract and be manager and then leave 2 weeks before Christmas next year, they'll pay me up. They're obviously then called his bluff and said, okay then, what your notice? Mm-hmm. We'll carry on as normal.
Yeah.
So what do you think the next move in this is?
I don't know. I mean, clearly they can't afford another manager.
Yeah.
So the notion that he would go in gardening leave Disney hold any workers, as far as I'm concerned, he either has to go for nothing and then that whatever the salary is, would be transferred to an incoming manager. But there might be costs dependent on getting rid of the rest of them. Because the new manager might not want the coaching staff. You don't know about that.
Yeah.
But I can't see them just letting him collect his wages for a year. I just don't see that happening, unless he's actually doing a job. Now, that's what I would like to see him doing, a job, because I think he's hopeless. You just take a look at him, he hasn't got a clue.
Yeah, he is. And then, of course, you've now got the SFA and the SPFL seem to be starting to move towards dealing with Rangers, because obviously now they're chasing him for the £250,000 fine in relation to the EBTs.
Uh-huh.
And they've cited Rangers and Mike Ashley in relation to Mike Ashley's involvement in the management of Rangers Football Club. And for me, the thing that's really funny in all of this is they're now getting it all mixed up, and their knickers in a twist. Well, not knickers in a twist, they're getting all mixed up. 1 minute they're old co, 1 minute they're new co.
Mm-hmm.
They now are dancing to the old co, new co tune to try and wriggle out of every situation so that you've also got... So that I think part of the defence in the Alexander case was that they were a new co.
Mm-hmm. But part of the defence on the boy that went down to United was that they won now.
Yeah. Yeah, because you've now got the old co, old Rangers, are chasing new Rangers for some of his money.
PDO, of course, because they have to.
Yeah. So it's all a complete farce.
There's another thing today about the SPL, or the SPFL, were refusing to pay them £250,000 television revenue.
That's because they were fined under a Lord Nimmo Smith inquiry for players having EBTs.
Mm-hmm. And you mean they're innocent of?
Oh, exactly. And as part of the five-way agreement, in order to get, and again, this re-emphasises the fact that they are a new club, in order to for the SFA to allow the transfer of share from the old football team to the new football team, so the new football team could start within the league setup. Mm-hmm. The five-way agreement was that the new team would be liable for the football debts of the old team.
Mm-hmm.
So, patently, there is an old team and a new team, yet they're continuing with this new club. Just bought the history, same club myth.
Yeah, I know. I mean, obviously, read Phil McGillivan, and he's been quite... pretty accurate in some of his predictions, the way things are, and he seems to have somebody in there who's feeding on information. But he goes on about onerous contracts. Now, is that the likes of some players, the coaching staff, or is it Charlie Green, or what is it? What's all that about?
No, the onerous contracts that they've got are the contracts that were old Rangers, that they needed in order to, that they had at the old Rangers, they too paid over to the new company. And so the contracts of the old players were retained, of the ones that they kept when they too paid them over to the old, to the new company. And of course that then causes a problem, because if you've got a raft of players who are on the 10, 15 grand a week level that the old players at the old club were on,
mm-hmm.
when you then go to sign new players at the new club, you can hardly sign them at a grand a week, because they'll just complain because this guy's currently on 10, 15 grand a week. And certainly from speaking to people in the last week or so, one of the sort of things that people have been saying to me is that the problem Rangers have got is just the nature of owning the infrastructure of Ibrox, Murray Park, and the cost of upkeep of those types of facilities, and the personnel, the numbers of personnel you need to have just to have those type of facilities exist. It's about 70 million quid just to run Rangers before you put a team on the park.
Mm-hmm.
And then because if you want to maintain the structure and stature of Rangers in terms of having an academy set up and a development squad and all that sort of stuff and the coaching staff that you need in order to have that, even if you want to have a first team squad at the standard of Aberdeen in terms of player wage at four grand a week, the whole thing of running Rangers with even an Aberdeen standard of squad would cost Rangers about £30 million. So Rangers need about £30 million a year to run with an Aberdeen standard of squad.
That's just a team?
Uh-huh.
Over and above all the other expenses?
No. £30 million quid is how much it would cost to run a football business with a team the standard of Aberdeen playing out of Ibrox Stadium. Mm-hmm. They're not, their turnover at the moment is about 20 million quid. So that's short. And then the other thing was, in all this stuff about Rangers needing £8 million of a loan from Ashley to trade through the next 12 months, that £8 million is based on current business projections. They will need £8 million over and above the projected income that the club will make. But the projected income is based on Rangers getting out of the Championship in the summer mm-hmm. and playing in the Premier League next season, and whilst playing in the Premier League, for their season book numbers to go up to the number of season book sales that they had the last season the old Rangers was in the SPL, and for the price of a season book to be the price that a season book was the last season the old Rangers were in the SPL. So Rangers, if Rangers sell 22,000 more season books than they've sold this season, and those all those season books, this you know the number they've sold this season plus the extra sales, if they sell those season books at £100 more per book than they've sold the tickets this season, if they do all of that, they will only need an additional £8 million to trade through next season. So then that's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So I really don't know what how Rangers get with this mess.
Well,
they are Leeds. They are Leeds United. That's the mess that Leeds United are in.
They're still playing. I was hoping the situation would have come out of it all a couple of years ago where they would never be playing again, at least not at any level that interest is.
But Leeds have got no prospect of getting back into the Premiership and playing at the level they were playing.
It's because there's a lot of good teams down there who'll stop them.
Yeah, but Rangers are. Yeah, but it's finances that stop them getting there. Rangers are in the same position. Mm-hmm. They will get to playing in the SPL, but they can't get back to the level that the old Rangers were at.
People say that, but there's always it seems to me there's always a way they weasel out. Do you know, there were several times I thought, even long before this, that Celtic were in a position to bury them and would lose important games to them. And that would encourage the Orcs to come back out in their droves. Now, I hope to God that's not going to happen next February or the end of January, whenever it is.
But that's my point. Even if the Rangers fans come out...
So they don't even get an idea that in some way they can bail them out by losing this cup
even,
match.
But even if... That's my point. Even if the Rangers fans come out in their hordes and 40,000 of them buy a season book, they will still be £8 million short of what they need just to trade through the season.
Uh-huh. But if Celtic were to bury them, if Celtic were to beat them comfortably, that would just disappear over the horizon. Any prospect of that? Because they couldn't deal with it. But too many times in the past, I've seen things where I thought we could really put them to the sword here, and we lost the games. And you wonder what was going on.
Well, we'll see. It's close to Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a game against Dundee United at the weekend and then a game against Ross County. What's your predictions for those two games?
Well, I was hoping that if Celtic had a good week's training and went up and did their job properly, they'd beat Dundee United because they're a better team than Dundee United, despite some people think. But they need to play properly, especially after last week when Dundee United were, I think, in a sense, surprised by Aberdeen's vigour. You know, I think Dundee United thought they were actually a better team than that, and they lost. It was a poor result for them.
Yep.
But if Celtic do their job properly, as always, I think they can win that game. Hey, I was hoping to get to the Ross County game because I know Anthony's coming home, and he was talking about going up. So I thought, well, Claire will be home as well, so we might get tickets and go to that game.
Okay. And your predictions for the scores?
I don't know. And you never know what scores will be, as long as they win. I just work on the basis that let's win. I like it when they win comfortably. They don't always do that. There was somebody tweeting last week about, a couple of weeks ago, about the, it was the anniversary of the game we beat Dundee United to win the League Cup. Then the Thames year. And they were reminiscing about it. And I met with Father Willie Boyd, who's the parish priest down in Irving. I don't know if I told you this. And he said, outside the ground, he says, what do you expect today? What do you expect today, George? And I says, well, I said, I'm actually fed up going to cup finals where I'm biting my nails at the end.
Yeah.
Even though we win, I said, I would love to sing them home. And that day they did. I mean, they were 3-0 up with 20 minutes to go and either of us rocking. It was just a brilliant experience. I like games like that.
I'm the same. The amount of times that maybe there's... I'm sometimes betwixt and between for big games. The amount of times that 2-3 minutes to go and you're thinking, if we could just go up the park and score a goal. You know, you're maybe 2-0 up. If you just go up the park and score a goal with 3 minutes to go, you know that that's it, the game's over and there's no chance. But at the same time, you also know that what they really should be doing is taking the ball down the corner flag and wasting 45 seconds down there.
Well,
so.
I've talked about that before. That's just good professional play sometimes.
Yeah.
But, I mean, in the bottom line, if they were to play Inter Milan and win by one goal, that would be super. But it would be nice if they could beat them by 2 or 3 goals, yeah. Which I don't know. But those are the most satisfying games. The ones you look back on, you think that was a brilliant win. It's when they scored a few goals.
Aye. I mean, obviously the ideal would be we're beating Inter Milan by one, not even 2 goals, 2-3 minutes to go. We scored a third.
Now you're dreaming.
You can relax and then you can... Yes, exactly. Now I'm dreaming. But hey, what's the point of being a football fan if you don't dream?
Yeah, you always live in hope.
Yes. Anyway, I have kept you long enough, Flacky, so that's enough from me and enough from you, so good night.
Thanks very much. Take care.
Cheers.
Enjoy Christmas.
You too. Thanks everybody who emailed in to win a copy of Stephen Murray's 10 Men Won the League, which you can still get online at amazon.co.uk or amazon.com if you're in the States, or I suppose amazon.au in Australia and wherever else in the world that you are listening to our podcast. Go online and get a copy there. And if you emailed in, I took the successful emails to the answer, who was our top scorer and how many goals did they score in that season. Sent them over to the author, Stephen, and Stephen was picking one out the hat. As I texted him before I recorded this, he didn't have the person's name yet, but there will be one lucky winner who will get a signed copy of that book. For everybody else, thanks very much for listening. Thanks for entering the competition. In the meantime, enough from me to say that it's been a pleasure doing every podcast that I ever do, talking about our wonderful football club. From me, Harry Brady, and everybody else who writes or contributes to the podcast, may I wish you and yours a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. See you after Christmas, when we will still be in all 4 competitions in top of the league. But enough from me. This is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight and Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas and goodnight.
Millions are willing to give their lives for you. There's nothing live on. Learning to cope with feelings aroused in me. My hands in the soil, buried inside of my. Thank you. answer.